and thank you for all being on time. I was just indicating to members informally. I have received municipal apologies from a number of you, and what we have been asked to do is when there are municipal apologies, to please get some, the only one who would have a challenge would be, you represent a number of smaller parties, Honourable Elders, and you are therefore in a number of other areas at the same time, so given that you're representing five or six parties, yours will suffice as a political apology. For the other three that we got, we do need to have from your respective wit that you are on party political business. And that applies to the EFF, the ANC, and the DA when this comes up. An email will suffice, and that is it. Thank you. All right, now we're going to immediately move on to the adoption of the agenda. I don't see us delaying the meeting beyond the 9:30, 9:15. Can I please have someone to propose adoption? Thanks, Honourable Kalaka, seconded by the Honourable Mantash. The apologies received. The only one is the Honourable MacPherson. In this respect, we do not have any other apologies, not as yet. But we will allow 15 minutes for that. And the reason for the 15 minutes is one of the buses is legitimately delayed in behind an accident as we talk. So, beyond anyone's control. And now we have in attendance the National Credit Regulator, which will continue its work and briefing to us. We have the CEO, Ms. Mochigari, Mr. Tongwana, the Deputy CEO, and Mr. Sharper, the Company Secretary for the Department of Trade and Industry. Welcome again to the DDG, the Director General. I saw him. Yes, here we are. I did see you earlier, yes. Mr. October, the DDG, Corporate and Consumer Regulatory Division, Mr. MacDonald, Mr. Kumkani, Director CCRD, Ms. Caroline Kongwa Hankanga. You know, you've got this double-barreled surname now, wowee, and you're still on your way, no doubt, from the airport. And Mr. Nkwasi, is he here, CCRD? Thank you, right. On that note, I just want to remind members, yesterday I said that we would try and make available principal legislation that is related to the National Credit Regulator. That is coming if it hasn't already been distributed. Is here. I also asked members yesterday to please look up their material they had received on the status of debt in the country. To remind you, we received this last year as well as this year. And we do not want paper. That was a lot of paper involved. But if members are truly having a problem in locating it, please let the secretary know. Is that all right then? All on track? And then we're straight over to yourself then, CEO. Just, I think it's now 8:10. All right. And of course that numbering system is a little bit wrong. It should go on to 09. And it should be, you know, the apologies, let's see, 0900. Half an hour or an hour on the matter. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Jefferson, and good morning to all Honourable Members, the DG, the Deputy DG, and the Director of the DGI. Today, we are going to be talking about any legislative amendments that would be required for us to be able to effectively deal with the debt relief measures under the NCA that we presented on yesterday, together with the debt forgiveness program that we proposed at yesterday's meeting. And our understanding is that the committee has approved the extension of to have NCRs, you know, powers extended to be able to effectively implement, you know, these recommendations. However, before we go there, I would just like to remind, you know, honourable members about the fact that we have a population in South Africa that is highly indebted and over-indebted, in the sense that out of the 23 million credit active consumers in the country, 42% of these consumers are considered to be impaired, in the sense that they have they have accounts that are 3 and more months in arrears. They have judgments, they have, you know, adverse listings. And therefore, I think it is important for us to make sure that we are able to, you know, assist these consumers. In certain instances, it would be because of, you know, regular loans that have been extended to them. In other instances, it could be that these consumers have borrowed responsibly, they've been lended money responsibly, but they find themselves in a situation where they are fresh, because it's not just a matter of credit that puts them in that position. If real costs have gone up, food prices have gone up because of, you know, because of the drought, logistic costs have gone up. So consumers in the country are stretched in as far as, you know, all of this is concerned. So, and that's the reason why it is important for us to think of, you know, to come up with immediate measures to assist them. At this point in time, Honorable Chairperson, allow me please to just ask the Company Secretary, Lucy Mashapa, to just take you through some of the amendments that we want to suggest be implemented. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the Honorable Members. The powers that we have currently to conduct investigations are in two ways. The first one is the complaints that we receive from consumers, or business who lodge complaints with NCR on behalf of consumers. And in the legislation, you find that in section 133, subsection 1. This type of investigation is generally reactive, because it's based on information that we receive at any given point in time. And the issues that we can investigate are limited in the complaint. We cannot go beyond the complaint. The second type of investigation that we can conduct is under section 186 subsection 2, which is a complaint initiated by the NCR in its own name. And more importantly, the section that gave us power to initiate a complaint doesn't define the criteria for the initiation of a complaint by the NCR, so there is no specific requirement. And this type of investigation allows the NCR to be proactive and to respond to any new trends and developments relating to compliance with the legislation. However, with this type of investigation, we have encountered a problem in the tribunal, in the sense that we brought a case against Epitech back in 2018 relating to its multi-loan product based on the initiation fees that were being charged. And because that investigation was initiated by the NCR in its own name, the tribunal felt that we didn't have reasonable suspicion to initiate the complaint, and therefore the complaint and the investigation were declared invalid. So we lost the case simply because they said we didn't have any reasonable suspicion to conduct the investigation. And the problem that we have had since then is many entities are basically refusing to be investigated, if I may put it in that way. Because each time that we initiate a complaint in our name, they will say that, what suspicion do you have that we are breaking the law? And therefore, a lot of investigations that we could have conducted had to be stopped, because we need to formulate the reasonable suspicion as the basis for initiating the complaint. And therefore, this judgment, this capital judgment, is limiting the NCR's ability to proactively investigate entities and to respond to any new trends and developments that we see in the industry relating to compliance. And for us, this is a very significant limitation to our ability to regulate the industry. In terms of the current process, once we complete an investigation, the investigation itself is referred to the tribunal through an application, and the entity against whom the referral is made will file a response to the application, and then the NCR will file a reply to the response. I mean, between these three processes, starting with the NCR initiating the application, it can take about 60 days just for the pleadings to be closed in the tribunal. And once we have filed our applies to the response of the entity, usually a pre-hearing meeting is arranged between the parties to decide on what issues will be admitted and which ones will be contested at the hearing. And then a hearing date will also be set after the pre-hearing date. Thereafter, there will be a formal hearing where arguments are presented before the tribunal, and thereafter the tribunal will issue a judgment. And the process is now, in our experience, is taking more than 9 months. The current outcomes with the approach is, first of all, we refer an investigation to the tribunal. So we don't make a determination that the entity must give redress to consumers within a specified date and find that they must say. We can only say this is the investigation, these are the findings, and based on this, this is what we are recommending. We don't have the power actually to impose the redress on the entity and also a fine. And many entities now, because of the capital judgments, in fact, almost all the big cases that we have referred, they are raising technical points of procedure, and specifically the issue of reasonable suspicion. They are saying that we didn't have a reasonable suspicion to initiate an investigation. And in all cases, this is the technical point. And for us, I think it puts our basis at risk, because on the evidence, we have very strong evidence, but the problem is, they say we shouldn't have investigated because we didn't have any suspicion. We also have problems with what we call interlocutory applications. These are applications to postpone the hearings, applications to request further documents, applications to request the NCR to substantiate the complaint and more. And interlocutory applications can take 4 to 5 months for the NCR and the entity to exchange documents and for the tribunal to actually hear the intellectual application. We also have problems with postponement. And lastly, sometimes the entities file their papers late, they apply for condemnation for the late filing of documents. And that can be a hearing also in itself before the application is heard on its merits. So given our experience now, we really appeal to the committee to assist us by extending our powers. First of all, from the investigation side, we need more inclusive investigation powers so that we can investigate entities proactively without consumer complaints and without having reasonable suspicion of any wrongdoing. We should be able to go into an entity, say it's a jet store, and to ask them to give us a sample of the loans, the account that they opened the past 30 minutes, for us to check if they charge the fees correctly, were the loans granted properly and not recklessly. And we should be able to do this at any time, at any given time, to be able to go into a store and conduct an audit like that. Because what we find is sometimes, because we need complaints from consumers, because we need to have a reasonable suspicion, you find that the law was breached 2 years ago. People were charged mediation fees incorrectly in 2014. But because we don't have the power to proactively investigate, we only uncover that in 2016, 2 years down the line. And you look at the Lewis example, the refunds of the retrenchment covered pensioners, it starts from 2003. but we only encountered that in 2015, probably 6 years after that occurred. So we believe that if our powers are enhanced in this way, where we can investigate without consumer complaints or level suspicion, we will be able to see, identify problems with the entities and have redress given to consumers quickly. And we also need the power to conduct a compliance audit. Currently, we don't have the power to do an audit, not an investigation, to send in auditors to conduct an audit. We don't have the power. We also don't have specific powers to conduct unannounced raids on entities, because we use our investigation powers, and when we go to smaller towns and cities, what we have to do is to formulate the reasonable suspicion again. And if we have to inform the companies that we are coming to conduct a raid, the evidence will be hidden, obviously. And what we found during our raid is thousands of bank cards and SASSA cards and ID documents that are kept mainly by micro lenders. So if we can have the specific power to conduct an unannounced raid, that will also help us to improve our level of supervision. More importantly, we also request the committee to consider giving us a judicial administrative powers, which will enable us to enforce the findings from our investigation. And this power should give us the authority to give redress to consumers within a specified time frame. So if we investigated a beneficiary data and we found that they wrongly charged retrenchment card, we should be able to order them to refund it within 30 days, for example. And if they appeal to a tribunal or the court, they must appeal that order. It mustn't be an investigation. It must be a specific order that says, we conducted an audit, we found that you have overcharged by 100 million, refund it within 30 days. And if they appeal that specific order. We also request the power to impose administrative fines, obviously under a defined criteria for breaches of the NCA, and also to direct entities to conduct only at their own cost, where we have identified the breaches of the legislation. And the power that we are requesting is not like we are unique. The typical example that we have now is the Nigerian Communications Authority's fine on MTN. It was done by the regulator. We also had the Reserve Bank, I think it was 2 years ago, fining banks for breaches of the FICA Act. And we also have SARS. They can impose administrative fines. So all what we are saying here is we believe that it will serve the consumers better and also greater attention to companies if we are able to have this type of power residing within the NCR and with a tribunal only serving as an appeal body. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mashalka. Do you wish to add to that, CEO, Ms. Machigari?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Not really. I think what we wanted to do was to take honourable members with the powers that we currently have, and what we are requesting to be able to effectively implement the recommendations that we presented yesterday in terms of the debt relief, under the NCA and the debt forgiveness programs that we proposed. Thank you.
Right. Does the EDD wish to come in? Well, at this particular point then, members, we're now, those of us who were here yesterday, we did get the apologies of others. We started on this process, but we mainly dealt with the critical issues around the study that had been requested, plus, of course, some of the areas which could more speedily be addressed in terms of debt forgiveness. We're now moving today, this morning, onto powers. Is that clear? The current powers, the challenges in being able to fully implement the mandate. This is the challenge that is being faced at the moment. So we would ask you to raise, make any comments at this point. I'm referring in particular to something I think you raised, Honourable Albert, around the insurance issue. Do you remember? And maybe this is a good time to raise it. I said we would be having the NCR back. But any other member, please, comments, questions, clarifications. Okay, the Honourable Albert first. Okay, yourself second, Honourable Hilders. Is there anyone else? Honourable Colonel, Honourable Mansash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies, I wasn't here yesterday, but I did catch up on your presentation. Thank you very much for this. I actually would like to make you a deal. We'll give you the powers that you need if you scrap all eco bills. Not that. Okay. This is recorded. Thank you very much for the presentation. The chairperson mentioned the matter regarding the insurance, credit insurance, and the caps. I'm not sure if this would be part of the discussion, because this is more about debt forgiveness. I do think debt forgiveness has a place in our economy, given our restrictions that we have at the moment. I would just like to know exactly what the extent of your powers would be, and exactly to motivate why it needs to sit with you, and what protection would be against abuse when the powers do sit with you to provide remedies and impose sanctions on role players that do not comply with the law. And there was just another question I wanted to ask. Let me just see quickly. Yeah, I'll come back. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thank you for the presentation. I basically totally agree with everything that you said. And I assure you, if you bring us a bill, you'll have my support. But I would suggest, though, that you need to go even further than that. You have to have greater powers in the illegal space as well, because as I often repeat in this committee, there are many, many crimes and sins in the regulated legal space, but they are probably dwarfed by the size of the crimes and the abuse that takes place in the illegal space. And your hands are completely tied because you rely on SAPs, which doesn't really regard it as serious crime. And it is a very serious crime. And it really destroys the financial livelihoods of so many people. So I would love to see you getting expanded powers in terms of the illegal space as well, with your own search and seizure units, your greatly expanded investigatory and inspection power, and somehow some sort of ability to be able to go into to raid illegal operators and ashenises and to shut them down. So if you bring us a bill that provides for the expanded powers that you requested this morning, with much greater expanded powers in the illegal space as well, then I think we'll have a really revolutionised regulator that can really have some serious teeth.
Thank you, thank you, Chairperson. What I want to know in the interim, is it not possible, you know, to sit down with the Treasury or the FSB, especially, you know, when you're acting against banks, to take the necessary action you're going to seek now in new legislation? Is that not an option? And then secondly, the cost of what you're going to ask us to do in terms of new legislation, you know, do you have some sort of maybe a thumb suck at this stage, but you know, would it be excessive?
Very much, Honourable Colonel, Honourable Mantash.
Thank you, Chairperson. I fully would support the approval by the committee of the recommendations, but I just want to check whether the department does have a legal capacity to cover your back, because you have raised that at some point you are demoralized by people who say you don't have, well, or you have not a lot of procedure, judicial issues. to have that capacity to target them so that when you pull a sanction, you are not challenged at some point, so that we can re-regulate the time frame of attending to those cases that will go and investigate it. And I'll be very much, you know, excited when we have those powers to do unannounced raids, because there's a lot of illegal issues that are being performed by some families, as Honorable Lewis is saying. For the first time, I agree with him. And if you have these powers, really, the continuous postponement of matters that have to be attended by court will be minimized, so that the country can go forward.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mantash, Honorable Kalaku.
Chair, mine is, since I think we all agree the committee will be waiting for the department and the credit regulator to actually present to us the amendments in a bill form. But DG, since this has implications in the budget, it means if we give these powers to the credit regulator and for the protection of the people, it means that the structure itself must be beefed up. There must be added personnel. I think which must be another area which between you, TG, the department, and the committee will look at it at that. Because, you know, we might take this, the debt problem of the country. In fact, as you are dealing with the economy as a department, you know the implications and the problems which are there affecting South Africans across class and color lines. So this, to me, is very much, much important. It changes the lives of people. So if we... we can to be able to actually implement it and begin to process it as soon as possible, it will be very much important for us to do that. But I'm sure we'll take a guide and the process and steps from you as a department, so that as a committee we can fall in line. But more on my side, it would be this side of financing of the whole changes which we'll have to implement as committee.
Thank you very much, Honourable Clark. I'd just like to ask the CEO, Ormiston Shopper, in fact, to just come in on the further clarification on the FSB. Because at an earlier meeting, I don't mean yesterday, I mean earlier on in the year, the certain issues raised around the, I think the CT at the time, which had been inadvertently identified, and as it turned out, if the HSB had been effectively implementing their monitoring, if we can put it that way, such matters would not have arisen. And this also relates to issues around the Capitec Bank as well, which you had indicated earlier you had or you were engaging with them and trying to address some of the challenges. I wonder if you would also deal with that in this meeting. And I'll hand over to yourselves now.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. And I'd like to thank committee members for their comments and questions. In terms of why the power should sit with the NCI, we really believe that, you know, we can do much more speedily without having to refer matters to the, you know, to the National Constitutional Tribunal at all times. Because what normally happens, as Mr. Mashapa indicated, is that we'd refer matters to the tribunal, and what two things may happen. I mean, there may be delays in the fact that there are affidavits that need to be exchanged, documents that need to be exchanged, postponements of hearings. And in the meantime, you know, consumers continue to be exploited in the process.
So that's, you know, one of the reasons why we feel, believe that if the power is set with the NCR, then we'll be able to, consumers would be able to get redressed, you know, quicker. And the probability of abuse would be reduced by the fact that, you know, entities can appeal, you know, to the NCT or the court for that reason. And in terms of the costs involved in the extended powers that we request, one of the ways that we are considering is to submit a proposal to the DTI around getting the fines that we'll be imposing, you know, to add to at least assist us in the work that we do. But we can look at other avenues, because we do take cognizance of the fact that, you know, National Treasury or DTI might not have the necessary resources, you know, to assist us, you know, in that regard. I'd like to at this stage just maybe ask my colleagues to respond to the other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Honourable Committee members. I think the support that the committee is expressing is encouraging. Honourable Alves, on credit insurance, as you would know, in November last year, the DTI published a credit life insurance regulation which proposes caps based on 1,000 per credit. It was generally 450 per thousand of credit. And we are busy now with the financial services board finalizing that regulation for implementation. And we have seen instances of abuse where consumers are charged 59 per thousand. Extreme examples are 130 per thousand of credit. And we believe that the regulation should be finalized and implemented quickly. In the regulation, we also included a clause to prevent insurance companies from selling retirement cover to unemployed people. And that's also an important principle that has been formally established now. Regarding possible abuse of the requested judicial administrative powers, we will, once we have these powers, we will generally follow the principles of administrative law. Once we complete an investigation, we will communicate the findings to the entity and request them to respond to the findings in writing, and hopefully also have some meetings before we decide to impose the sanctions. And I think you will find that generally, if we follow that approach, it should be able to pass the constitutional matter in that regard. On the issue of insurance, Chairperson, we have worked with the FSB on the insurance regulation, and we've only started recently to start sharing notes and sharing information. They've issued an information request to insurance companies, and they shared that information with us. But the committee will also keep in mind that we only started regulating credit in 2007. And we share the mandate with the FSB on credit insurance. And our mandate only started in 2007. And we uncovered these abuses in furniture retailers for retrenchment cover that is being sold to pensioners. Ideally, we would like the refunds not to start in 2007, to start in 1994. I mean, for pensioners that are still alive, if they've ever bought furniture and paid retrenchment cover since 1994, they should be refunded if they are still alive. Because we believe that even before the NCA, under the insurance legislation, that should have been illegal in any case. And we also know that the FSB has been treating customers fairly principles. And one of the principles is around whether consumers are getting a fair deal. And those principles, if they are applied, they should achieve the same outcome as the NCA. Thank you, Chairman.
Yes, thank you very much for the comments around the insurance, because it's been an ongoing situation. But let me just take the DDG. Thanks, McDonald.
Thanks, Chairperson and Honourable Member. My comment is relating to the creditless insurance, that it is true that the FDR and the FSB, as technical people in that regard, are moving very fast. And then as a department, as you may know, we need to consult with the Minister of Finance. That is our minister. In terms of the law, is obligated to consult with the Minister of Finance. It is in consultation with. So, what is happening is that we also requested the Minister through the DG to approach Parliament, that is yourself, to comment on the credit life insurance, and then we request that things will converge and move very fast. That is the comment in that regard. The other issue is the costing part of it. The DG is here as an accounting officer, but this process is very tedious. And then we will also be guided by yourselves as you oversight the institution. And then we also have the fees that were increasing for them. That and they will have an extra source, but I'm not saying it is enough. The regulatory impact assessment, the name has changed, yes, but it's still regulatory impact assessment. Generally, cost, how much will it cost this bill or this act through its implementation? And therefore, what Honorable Karakho is saying is genuine, that there may be a need for bloating the institution, but within these economic constraints. Thanks.
Very much. DG?
Yes, I just want to add my voice to that and confirm that with regards to the availability of our financial resources, I think it's to be noted that I think it's a global phenomenon, and I think our treasury is also well aware of the importance of a well-regulated financial sector and a drain that this over-indebtedness is causing to our economic growth. So I think the impact is clear. So I can confirm that in terms of availability of resources, we will be able to find the resources both within the department and in terms of additional resources from National Treasury. As you know, the Twin Peaks is up for debate as we speak, and I think in that there's a recognition that the NCR is a vital part of the new Twin Peaks architecture.
The Twin Peaks, we did have a briefing on that, as you're aware, DG, in fact, two briefings. And it's pertinent, I think, when we get back in August to just refresh our minds on the matter. But is anyone else from the we haven't had all the questions responded to in comments. So I'm looking at the NCR.
Deputy CEO, you want to add?
I'll go through the list of questions, Chairperson, but I can't find anyone that was not answered. I don't know if you guys can provide.
I think the one was around the powers, per se, and after all today we were agreeing that lofty in. Yes, DDG.
No, thanks. I regret the completion of Honorable Lewis as a sort of a comment to say, please, when you come with this amendment of empowering yourself, also cover the illegal space, and therefore have enough resources, investigative power, intrusive power. So I regard that as a comment which should guide the article. And then as to the amendment, the DTI, as we confirmed yesterday, we are prepared to take whatever the committee say go ahead. So we will deal with the amendment, we follow the normal ways. And then regarding the powers, whatever we do, we want to do it within the law, within the constitution. These intrusive powers, seizure, search without warrants or with a warrant, all those processes will be followed. So, and then we'll be working with the parliamentary lawyers and the state attorneys. They will also advise. So we are not adding anything that is ultra vires, if I may say so. So the issue of postponements of the MCT, either the case has been made to say give us power to impose sanctions, but if people want administrative justice, you have the right to appeal or review. That one is a constitutional right. So I wouldn't like to disturb a lot of normal processes, but we are saying all of us, MBT is a DCI institution. If there is a constraint, we also need to go to that route, because people may ask unnecessary postponement, and therefore we need to also make it capacitated to capacitate them in that way. So from our side, I think the joint working between FSB and NPR, I think we need to rig this to legislation so that we move in tandem. We discovered something during the credit self-insurance day that we may be doing a lot of this side, but if there is no movement that side, I'm not coaching any person, but we need really to have an impact jointly as government. So that is my take generally, and we hope that we responded to all questions. Thanks.
Thank you. But I think that during the course of one of our meetings, when the, I'm not sure of the different people here, but you may have been here yourself, it comes under the liquor legislation, you know, regulatory issues. It was reported here last year that the department or the entity, when during the, as it were, the oversight or the monitoring of what was going on with illegal supply of liquor and the rest, there was a joint operation conducted with SARS, not SARS, with SAPS, South African Police Services. You may recall that DG and DDG. Do you remember that joint operations last year? So, with respect to this, we could consider, or you could consider, and I'm thinking of the point made by yourself, Honourable Hill Lewis, that they could conduct a few more joint exercises, but this time, in respect of the credit, National Credit Regulator. Why not do that when it comes to, you know, the points that were made on in the illegal side, per se? You know, currently that falls directly under SARS and the measures that they can take, and not yourselves. But if there'd been a joint operation, after all, even if the legal people are not allowed to abuse the law, least of all illegal. Right, thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, let me just make a comment to that. Normally when we conduct our raids, we work jointly with the police in conducting those raids. We would consult with them prior to the raids being conducted. But then when we do the raids, we normally, you know, do that jointly with the police. And that's the reason why you find in all instances where we conducted raids that you have credit providers arrested in the process and criminal cases, you know, being opened. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Whittington, could you just come up to the desk, please, the table. Honourable Hill Lewis.
But Chair, my concern is that is, what is the conviction rate of those cases? They are not considered priority investigation. They're not considered priority by the SAPS Detective Unit or by the NPA. And so we've got people that are taking ATM cards, they are intimidating and even acting violently towards people who don't pay on time, they're charging 1,000% interest, crazy stuff stories, and they're not considered a priority crime.
Honourable Chair, I do agree with Honourable Hill Lewis, and I think it would be important to have to consider, you know, obtaining those powers of the NCR. What I was talking about was the current practice, you know, in terms of, you know, working directly with the police. Clearly, you know, there are weaknesses in that whole approach. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. DG?
No, I think still on that part, the Minister has approved the fresh rules and regulation.
Yes.
Yes.
and then we will be publishing them soon. And then this is talking to the machinists in point, illegal people. And therefore, we also need to have this joint rate. As to the punitive actions against them, we can request the penalties to be upped as an example. But in passing, this issue of commercial crimes is a government problem, because we may need to do classification. Crimes are classified to say this one is in schedule one or whatever. So we may need to work with the Department of Justice. But for these small powers, we can request here to increase the penalties. We concede on that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Elvis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on my previous comments and questions, I think what you're doing is very important. I think it's the right thing to do. I think the power should rest with you. I think that it will save a lot of time instead of, you know, having to go to the tribunal and trying to get court orders and powers in that way. Just on the credit insurance matter, can you tell me whether the credit insurance regulations have been finalized in full and will only be implemented, or is it still being debated? Particularly the cap of floor at 50 per thousand, is that an escalating cap or a reducing cap? Probably a reducing cap of some sort. The lower the amount is insured for. I know that the report has been added to the committee, has investigated the whole matter of credit insurance and what the appropriate caps would be. I can't recall the author of that report, but I think, Madam Chair, we need to also make sure what our mandate is in terms of addressing this question and how we will provide feedback to into the process to make sure that we find a suitable balance on stopping abuse but also not hitting the business itself. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Elvis. Thank you. So, members, at this particular point, did you want to come in there, Mr. Mishopper? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The regulation was published for public comment in November last year, and submissions were made by industry associations and all affected stakeholders. Now we have consolidated all the comments and made further changes to the regulation. And we just have to have a meeting in the FSB, finalize our discussion, and regulation will then be ready to be submitted to the ministers, the DTI minister and the finance minister, for publication. The proposal in the published regulation was for the premium cap to be on a reducing balance method. In other words, it will decline with the balance. And as I say, we are still finalizing the discussion with the FSB. Thank you.
That's it. Thank you very much. I think, you know, that sometime the Honourable Elbert has been raising this issue, and I'm glad that at least it's been raised officially now here in the committee meeting itself. But I think during the course of our deliberations on such matters now and after all this, what with other departments coming in to see us and engaging on the matter, and also the NCR and the Department of Trade and Industry engaging with their colleagues and other departments, we will be able to more completely address this issue. Because as we told them, it does concern me that we were aware last year, early this year, of the Capitec issue, but the limitations of the current powers of the NCR precluded them jumping the gun, as it were, you know, and completely dealing with it. So it is something that we do have to unpack during these deliberations. But I want to thank all members. I also want to thank the NCR, and also to note that we will just get that recap when you return, maybe just a 5-minute recap on the status of it. We've had it. It's an ongoing situation. Just an overview the next time you engage with us. And meanwhile, we will just reissue those documents to members. And then you would be returning to us. What date would be, Mr. Herman? Just getting it up right now. The 13th of May. You remember, members, I raised this yesterday. It is what we are calling our Long Friday. It is a Long Friday which we haven't had for 3 months. We have to have it to complete certain work. And on Friday the 13th in the Good Hope Chamber, starting at 8:30, finishing at 1 or so, there'll be the formal consideration of the remote gambling bill, followed by further engagement with the NCR, including the Saab, Capitec, FSB, and the conclusion of matters around the forgiveness of debt proposal, which we requested. I hope everyone's in order with that. So that is Friday the 13th. I see the venue is still to be confirmed, but we will keep in touch. Thank you. Now, members, according to today's program, we will now just bring back the remote gambling bill for consideration. That it is important that we bring this back now to the main committee. Thank you. We got your apology, Honourable. Yes, Jason. Okay. And we're going to ask the DG McDonald just to brief us on the policy which we've had for 2 months now and which we've all had the chance to study as we go into the consideration of the remote gambling bill. I would also like, if I may, to alert members to the fact that we did issue out, we asked the content specialist, Ms. Sheldon, to prepare a brief for you on the status of the remote gambling, but where are we with this? Some of you would have made your notes. What are the issues we decided on as we came to adjournment on that in the main committee? And we are now going to come right back. We must, of course, thank a couple of the people who came here, come now from the National Gambling Board itself. We did mention you earlier on, but just again for the record, Ms. Caroline Congwa Hangkanga, the accounting authority, and Mr. Mkwate, the director of CCRD, and of course the acting DDG. Just one moment, please. I just want to consult our table here. Just trying to keep up to speed with all the matters. Right. So we all got this. We're immediately then. Unless, Sheldon, you want to say a few words on what you've handed up. Anything in particular that you wanted to alert the committee to. Right. Okay. DG McDonald, thanks.
No, thanks. Chairperson and the Honourable Mayor and the DG colleagues. So I would just like to go on substantive issues in the policy. I would like to go into the process. Since when we parted, we were talking about the issue of saying the remote gambling bill is not informed by the policy. So we are saying here's the policy. Cabinet approved the policy early this year in February. And then the policy in the meeting provides for the issue of saying there must be coordination between among government departments. In particular, gambling generally is a matter of two competencies, that is the provinces and the national department or government. So therefore, the policy says there should be harmonization. Whatever we want to do. Now it is compulsory that we must put it in the domain of the policy council on gambling. Equally, when the provinces want to change their laws, we should not learn it in the government gazette or newspaper. It must be discussed within the central point. I think that is very understood by the provinces. And then the other issue is that we are saying there will be no online gambling. So the policy has pronounced that online gambling is not wanted. It is true that there is part and parcel of online gambling in, say, betting, horse betting and the like. So that area is not disturbed. So the traditional way of gambling is maintained, but online gambling, it is not approved in terms of this policy. And then just to say other issues in passing is that when we read the issue of remote gambling was actually saying even what is illegal currently should be done in a remote way. Example, we want to have dog racing. The dogs, the hounds, and the cockerel fight, pigeon, what is it?
Cockerel.
That is the cock fighting, and then the pigeon racing from Japan to here, all those issues. These are illegal party. These are illegal gambling. But if you read into the remote gambling, you can do that through the remote gambling process. So therefore, we are saying we are going to overstimulate gambling, whereas the policy as a young commission was to say this is harmful. Since it is harmful, please see to it that you limit that. The Constitution allows that, to limit certain rights, more so that it is harmful. Therefore, we cannot just allow things because we want revenues. Otherwise, one day we won't have people because they will be dead. So government has got a duty to protect the citizens. So in short, is that therefore, now that the policy is concluded, the honorable members have maybe to ask us to say, where is the implementing legislation? Where is the regulation? So, as for now, we are all approaching cabinet in order to approve the bill for wider consultation. And then we are also going to consult the CASTA, the DG's forum.
I just wanted the policy at this particular point. You have made reference to the gambling bill, which we will hear more about, but in the interest of time, perhaps we can close off with that again if we have sufficient time. But we are just at that. We said we would wait until the policy. We've got the policy. We've had the policy for some time. We would now ask members, given what they had here as an aid to bring them back on course from Ms. Sheldon, and also we have the proposer of the bill, the proponent, the Honourable Hill Lewis, who's here on sitting in front of me on my left and opposite yourselves. You've heard with respect, you've all had the opportunity yourself of looking at the policy, as I think you've got it in front of you. Do you wish to make any comment, preface anything at the moment on the issue, now that we do have a policy and your bill is on the table for us? Honourable Hill Lewis?
Chairperson, I'm not sure if it's useful for me to simply restate my position and summarise my position, which hasn't changed over time. I do not believe it is the correct or wise thing to do for the government to seek to ban online or remote gambling, which many South Africans already already do in a legitimate and legal way. There's no legitimate or rational distinction between betting on a soccer game online or betting on a roulette wheel online. It makes no difference in the mind of the public, and I don't think it should make any difference in the mind of the law. The second point is that on a principle level, I don't think it's a rational distinction. On a practical level, I think it's wiser for the government to regulate things and make sure that they are regulated properly, rather than seek to outlaw them. And that's especially true of gambling, which is, you know, whatever people think about gambling personally, it's not the government's job to tell people what they can and cannot do with their own private money. And so, and then thirdly, practically, it's not possible for any government anywhere, this has been proven, to be able to effectively enforce the ban that the department envisages in this policy. It will fail, as it has failed everywhere, not because the department is any less competent than any other department anywhere in the world, but because, by definition, the world of internet technology and gaming is so fast-moving and so advanced that it is better to regulate it properly and enforce stringent licensing conditions than it is to simply outlaw it. The fourth and perhaps the most important point, Chairperson, if I just may refresh members' memories about protecting the vulnerable in society. The argument has been put forward with a dire lack of substance behind that argument, that it's better for society to ban it. I have argued consistently with evidence supported by the National Responsible Gaming Foundation that it is far better and offers far better protection to the vulnerable to regulate properly and to use all of the vast array of technological capacity at our disposal to protect vulnerable gamers. Finally, so that summarizes my case. It is not true that the Vihan Commission said that online gambling should be banned. I would encourage members to go read it. It says that it should be further investigated. And I think it should be further investigated and a proper, appropriate regulatory regime should be implemented. Thank you.
Just before I ask the committee for comment and give them the opportunity to raise any questions, could you just give us your comment here in respect of the point about money laundering? You've dealt with the issue perhaps that well, perhaps could be harmful for some, not harmful for the others, and this could be regarded as a malicious pursuit, as it were. And people being, should have the right to handle their money and decide what they want to do with it. But if there have been a number of studies presented to the committee indicating that there is the danger of money laundering, increased risk of money laundering with respect to, in this case, remote gambling going ahead. Could you comment on that, please, Honourable Gilders?
Well, Chairperson, there is already a significant amount of online gambling that is legal in South Africa, and which has just been confirmed now will remain legal. And the point that I'm making is that it's an artificial distinction to say that some online gambling is legal and is absolutely fine, but others are not. In the mind of the public, there's no distinction between one game or the other. And I just don't think that there is a real distinction. So insofar as money laundering is a concern, that could happen with what is already legal. And so it relies on excellent regulation and a licensing regime that is properly enforced to ensure that it doesn't happen.
When we're dealing with legislation, I make my own notes as well. It's amazing how many times the electronic systems break down. Right, members, it's over to yourselves now. For any comments, raising other questions, Honourable Isbeheven. Anyone else on my right here? Honourable Mantash, Honourable Kurnoff, yes, Honourable Nkongi. Honourable Isbeheven.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Give my apology for being late. Madam Chair, gambling is probably one of the evils in our society. I say, certainly, my opinion is gambling one of the evils in the society. I think that people with more stricter affordability assessments and people now have to give them free much pay slips, etc., unfortunately missed the first part of the meeting. They cannot meet credit obligations anymore. And this resulted in many South Africans turning to gambling and digging themselves into an even deeper hole. And apart from money laundering, that's also one of the great evils of illegal money being dumped into a system. I would really think that as a responsible and a caring government must look at ways and means to curb this. Thank you.
Yes,
the question to the department. You know, quite correctly, online betting is legal with a licensed South African bookmaker. So can I ask you say for instance there's no national legislation that's being seeked here, adopted by Parliament. Would it be possible for the provinces then just to up the bookmakers, number of bookmakers, and then through that process start to license online gambling at provincial level? You know, should that be legal? I doubt that, but it's just maybe what you are saying.
Thanks, Honourable Colonel. Honourable Mantash.
Mr. President, I just want to pose one question to Honourable Colonel. If you say people are gambling anyway, and they use their own money, would you say because people are taking drugs and they use their own money, then there must be no law that regulates that? Is that what you mean? Because a wrongdoing is a wrongdoing, and we can't hold our breath. They're doing it anyway, let them do it. Is that what you mean?
No, so the reasoning has been pointed to. Honourable Mkombi?
Can I also ask all clarity on that?
Yes, thank you.
I'm not sure I understood the question because I didn't say that people are gambling anyway, so we should allow them to gamble. That's not what I said.
No, Honourable Mantash is referring to the point you made about money. They're using their own money, and you know, you made the point about these people having a right to spend their own money in their own way. I mean, that was what the reference was to. Honourable Mkongi? Honourable Colonel, could you just turn your mic?
No, thank you very much. I think generally South Africans should be very honest when they are debating some of the things. I just want to go, which I've made reference before, on the fundamentals of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. It's clear what kind of a society we are trying to build. And we are clear in the Constitution that we are not seeking to build in the society of gamblers. We don't want to build a society of gamblers. We want to build a society of workers. We want to build a society of people who are going to contribute constructively and meaningfully in the economy of the country, using their labor and also using their mental capacity. This is a society. I don't want the society of gamblers because I don't want to go to what Kalmar says about this problem of gambling. But the issue that is very important, that is the society we want. Secondly, there is a policy process in South Africa that has been adopted in the cabinet that is speaking about the national gambling policy, which is clear that we need to discourage this matter of both remote and online gambling from the public of South Africa. Because if we read historically, I'm reading this thing again, that we inherited a useless government from Trankai, from Siskai, from Uchatua, and so forth, that encourage this problem. That this problem is not inherently a South African problem. It has been transported by the systems of apartheid to gambling that has been done in those areas, where in particular African people were. If you go to Transkei, you go everywhere, you see that this game was promoted on poor African people. Why in an apartheid South Africa it was not encouraged like that? But where our people are in majority, it was encouraged. So it's the historical responsibility of every South African to encourage. I made an example in one of the meetings. That is why I'm not gambling even today. Because even if we are playing a dice at the corner in Kugulethu, we're always being arrested. And the white police will take our little money that we are making there, 100 rand, and take it and go and drink it. So it was in my mind that this thing of gambling is a problem. And moved out of it. So generally the issue is a question, what is the ethical motivation? What is the ethical motivation of promoting gambling in South Africa? What are the ethics? What is ethical about it? You know, because once you say people are doing it, therefore, let's leave it to happen, it's problematic. It is legitimate to ask a question, why do we not encourage drug abuse in South Africa and drug use? Why are we saying our people must stop abusing substance like liquor and so forth? It is a moral duty of our constitution to make sure that we don't put a burden to society, that taxpayers at the end of the day should pick up when those people fall. So it is not just an ideological matter. We can go into ideology. But the matter, what is ethical on a reason for this to take place? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me get the department's one off the table quickly, and then if we can come to yourself, Honourable Hill Lewis. It was a question specifically directed at the department. Would you like a DG or DDG?
No, thanks. I will deal with it, but I will request him to polish it up. Mm-hmm. But may I clarify myself that this policy is confirming the traditional gambling that we have. And then it is true that there was little part of online gambling in certain areas on the traditional gambling that we have. And then we must not overstimulate the society to gamble. And therefore, whatever we are doing, the Constitution allows us to restrict rights. This is not an absolute right. It is a relative right. So I just wanted to clarify that. That is a restricted right. So we are within the Constitution. So on the bookmaker, Mashamaja will deal with it then.
Morning, honorable members. The provinces are empowered to issue bookmaker licenses, and attached to those bookmaker licenses, online betting, which permits them to collect betting online on their bets that they are conducting on a daily basis. That is a right that they are actually accorded in terms of their legislative powers. Our role at national level is just to monitor and conduct oversight that there is no overstimulation of gambling at provincial level and nationally as well. And the VM Commission actually gave us that guideline that gambling should be strictly regulated with limitations, because while we will drive economic benefit, we will also equally get the inherent harms that will come with it, and that's why we should try to control it in that way. At the same time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now it's over to yourself, Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the points. Let me just respond to them in turn. Honourable Esther Hazen, thank you. I agree that gambling is a very unwise use of someone's money. As you said, I completely agree with that. But if you go and buy a car on a 6-year payment plan with a 30% balloon payment at 14% interest, use of your money, and yet it's legal. When you go and borrow money from a money lender to go and buy a new pair of jeans, that's a very unwise use of your money. It's also legal. And this comes to the question by Mrs. Mantaje. I agree that all of the things that I've just listed are very unwise uses of people's money. But in principle, our role should be to educate those people about wiser uses of their money and not ban them from making that decision for themselves. This is an activity that happens extremely widely, whether it happens in the illegal space or not. As Mr. Nkongi said, he used to do it on the corner, whether it was coffee or dice or whatever. It happens very, very widely, and what I would like to see is the government playing a role of acting to protect those people who are engaging in the activity in the same way that we do with credit consumers. We say that this is a legal activity and the decision is ours to make, but the role of the government is to act as a protector and a defender of your rights and your interests when you make that decision. And so we have a regulator, and so we have very strict rules, and so we have a National Credit Act which protects that engagement between you as the consumer and service provider. And so I think this is my principled belief. The best way to achieve protection and control is through regulation, not by banning it. And this comes to Ms. Nkongi's point finally. I completely agree that we do not want a society of gamblers. And I also completely agree that gambling in the past has mainly targeted poor black South Africans. But if you go, as I'm sure you have seen, in most taverns in South Africa, there's a limited payout machine which is legally there, licensed by this government, licensed by the provinces. There's, 40,000-50,000 of them around the country, DDG, and more rolling out every day. In almost every shopping centre in the country, and more rolling out every day, there's now an electronic bingo terminal that targets mainly poor South Africans to part with their money without any protection, without any FICA, without any protection of minors accessing those places. So
without any protection of minors?
As in children, not minors.
No, I did get that point. But on a serious note, do we have proof of this?
Absolutely. If you go to any tavern in the country, you will find people under the age of 18 gambling at a limited payout machine. It's illegal. It's absolutely illegal. They're licensed.
Someone under 18 to be in a tavern?
No. That's not legal. But the LPM is legally there. It's got a license. It's there. And that person doesn't have to be feted. We can't trace the money that's spent on that machine. So there's a lot of proliferation of dangerous and unhealthy gambling in South Africa, which still mainly affect poor black South Africans, and which the regulation and strict license control of online gambling would avoid, or would at least help a great deal to avoid. It wouldn't exacerbate at all. So then lastly to the DTI, I would contest the view that there's just a little part of online gambling that is legal. We are told by the industry that soccer bets are now the biggest form of bets in South Africa. Much of that happens online with bookmakers. We've seen bookmakers operating under a license from the Mpumalanga government, offering bets on the outcome of casino games happening in Europe. They have a camera over the roulette wheel in Europe. They're advertising on radio. They're advertising on TV. They're offering those bets nationally. They are doing extremely well for themselves, and we have not been able to act against them in any way, because what they are doing essentially under the current law is legal. Now, again, to my mind, there's no legitimate or rational distinction between what that company in Mpumalanga is doing and whether someone goes to Empress Palace, starts here on their day, and does that himself on a South African casino. In fact, I would argue that it would be better to do it here, because we would get the tax, we would be able to determine license conditions, we would be able to hold them accountable. I think that's all the points that are raised with me. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Hill Lewis. Honourable Esther Hayson.
Chair, Honourable Hill Lewis. I was under the impression to be old enough to legally gamble in this country, you have to be over the age of 18 years old. nobody, even on land gambling, you have to be over that.
I just wanted to point out
to
the department, you know, last year I know that we, the whole issue of the number of LT ins, yes, these abbreviations, that in some of the provinces they were taken almost out of hand, as it were, and in fact one wondered just how legally they were operating. And I know KZN were having a very serious problem in this regard, which hit the papers repeatedly, and that number of those licenses were not legally given, shall I say. But that being the case, we certainly didn't express a position as a committee that this is what we wanted to continue, that we had always envisaged some sort of limit on these machines and so on, as I understood things at the time, that one would need to just catch up and rebrief oneself, you know, oneself in their area. But the other issue is, I know the bingo machines came in a big way, that this had been seen as a church game or an old age home game or kids camp game, you know, and now it's just become a huge gambling operation, as it were. And the committee expressed concern at the time when it learned that such machines and operations were going on in malls where the public were frequented, and they were up and down, you can hear all the tinkling. And I was under the impression that this would have been looked at by the previous gambling board, as it were, the National Gambling Board. But I appreciate that things are only just up and running at the National Gambling Board and you're getting systems in place, but it should be something you look at. But the question and the comment to you, Honourable Hill-Lewis, with respect to the remote gambling bill, there is one point that I think that we would have agreed on in principle, and that is we don't want to promote gambling per se. As I understand it, we were all on board in that principle, and that given that we didn't want to promote it, and that it was identified as a form of leisure pursuit, if handled responsibly, if I can use that phrase, then it needed to be regulated. But the question which arose in 1999, I'm thinking when I first became chair in this committee and this form of gambling came up, was is this not considered a form of promoting gambling? You know, by sort of saying, right, well, you can do this with horse racing, you can do it with sports tools, you know, and now what we're going to do is X. And essentially, I would imagine your argument would be, well, we're regulating it. It's there. But the mere fact that we now would have a bill, because this is what you're proposing, has a bill on it, wouldn't that be seen as a form of promotion? This is a question to yourself.
Thank you, Jefferson. It is a good question. I totally agree with the principle that we shouldn't be promoting gambling. And the idea behind a bill is that the best way to again, exercise very tight control over the industry, and the best way to protect consumers is to have a very strict set of written down rules and regulations which limit the scope of what operators can do, who they have to report to, who can inspect them, all of those kind of things. And so, in the same way that we have a piece of legislation governing land-based casinos and all of the things that land-based casinos have to do, my view is again that the best way to achieve that control is with a well-crafted piece of legislation which sets out exactly what government expects of the industry, and it sets out what the penalties will be if it's not met, and does in that way. I think the worst way to achieve control is to simply say that we are banning the industry altogether, because then what will inevitably happen, as with all bad industries, I'm afraid, like the lesson of trying to ban alcohol in 1930s America, it will simply proliferate without any control and protection from the government. So that's my view.
Did you have a you want to say a comment, DG?
No, I just wanted to, on your earlier question about the bingo and the situation, I think, yes, we did actually spend last week in KwaZulu-Natal with the Premier because of this problem of the, as you know, the proliferation and the issued 33 licenses for bingo on the last day of the gambling board sitting. And as you said, some of it was in shopping malls and some of it was in major areas. There were social problems like Chatsworth, where there's a serious problem of addiction, gambling, range of spin-offs, but they issued those licenses. So, but I think we have now agreed, the gambling board was down there, and we've agreed that they would definitely stop and not regularize that licenses, that they would follow the national guidelines which we have issued on gambling, which again, as Henri Lewis is right, we've decided in that case to regulate it and to limit the impact. So KZN will only be allowed 5 licenses, for example, bingo licenses. It will be 25 kilometers away from where existing gambling is taking place, and it wouldn't be shopping malls. So as you said, so we would limit the negative impact of harmful gambling. So it wouldn't be near to Chatsworth, for example, and so on. But I think once you decide, I think the question is it's a policy choice whether you are going to allow a new form of gambling. If you do then decide to go that route, then you must properly regulate and limit it and so on. But I think the issue of Eastern Cape is very instructive. And you know, a lot of provinces went UDI on the issue of the bingo licenses, Gauteng, Eastern Cape and so on. The issue in the Eastern Cape now is they also rolled up many, many bingo machines, bingo licenses. The problem is now the casinos, where the jobs are created, are suffering. And even because there's a proliferation of gambling now, there's over-trading in that space, and as you said, the population's income is not rising. So you're actually threatening Hobbs now because of what the province thought then, they were going to get extra revenue, they were going to just make something. I think it's just very important that we don't, the warning about proliferation as well.
No, thank you very much. We just want to wrap up, so DEG, and last point from perhaps the National Gambling Board.
No, thank you. So, I compare with the DG. We assume that the policy is right, and then it is saying there should be national norms. So, I think that's the point that the DG is raising. And then, just in conclusion from our side is that the issue of Lotto Star in Mpumalanga, what is happening there, there's an agreement that the inspectorate should do their work, because in terms of the current legislation, they can do that. So therefore, that matter should be left to rest. And then, in addition, is that the issue of Lotto Star in the policy and in the act, we say Lotto is a national competence. It is not a provincial competence. So therefore, if somebody is licensed, by somebody who does not have the competence to license, then deal with it legally. So it will be dealt with. But the issue of bookmakers and the like, all those people who are playing Lotto, two numbers outside the operator's venue, winning, no longer going to the Lotto premises. Therefore, we are saying let them be licensed in the policy by the Lotto regulator, who is a Lotto Gambling Board and NLC. So that the money should go to the good cause, because we are losing money for the good cause. That is the purpose of the game. So I just wanted to clear that at a high level. Yeah.
I do appreciate it. Please put
now. I think all the important points have been made. I just want to say I think it's exactly the right approach to say that if bookmakers are offering bets on the outcome of the lotto, they should be licensed, regulated, strictly controlled, and they should contribute to the financial goal. That's exactly the same principle that's outlined in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you to everyone here. I do appreciate
the National Gambling Board and being here, but I think the EG covered your position with respect to KZN. Members, the Tuesday meeting has had to be postponed. That is the 10th of May. The 10th of May. Wednesday is still going ahead at, I think it's 9 o'clock here. Is that right? To 9 o'clock to a 1300. That is the meeting we link up with finance. Do you remember? The illicit financial flows, the transfer prices. Please attend. We initiated this process. And that is in M314. On the 13th, Good Hope Chamber to be confirmed. The further consideration, where is Honourable Hill Lewis with your formal consideration? And members, I am going to insist you reread this policy and go over the remote gambling bill. It is a proper fleshed out bill. Please, reread it. Know what you are talking about. This is legislation. It is not just a report. We must apply our minds. And that is on the 13th. And we will also have there the National Credit Regulator with Saab, Capitec, FSB. If we can get Labour, you know, we'll get them. But meanwhile, I am saying this here, and we are approaching the Minister in writing, that at the executive level, we would appreciate it if other ministers can be approached, as it were, to facilitate the engagement by the department and the National Credit Regulator, e.g. But I am putting such a request in writing to the Minister as well today. But I want to thank all members of DTI, CCRD, especially the DDG, yourself, Mr. McDonald, and members of the National Credit Regulator, Ms. Naidu, everyone present, and members for coming to early morning meeting. I thank you. Meeting adjourned until next week. Can the ANC stay behind for 1 minute? The ANC at the desk. Thank you.